The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this episode of Mind Pump, maybe my favorite.
We're finally releasing it.
Ever done. I'm so mad it took us this long to release this one.
Dude, this is, I'm not exaggerating, one of the most entertaining episodes I've ever done. We interviewed Joe DeCina from Spartan Races. He has the podcast Spartan Up. So it's a very popular podcast. If you're not familiar with Spartan Races, they are the obstacle course racing kings.
Yeah, they're dominating.
We went to a Spartan race not that long ago. It was a great thing to experience. Our buddy Ben Greenfield competes in them. But Joe DeCina is one of those people that you just want to hang around. Like, first of all, he's very down to earth, very real guy, very, very cool guy. I mean, we got the best vibe from this dude right away. We love him. We talk about him this way all the time. The stories he tells in this podcast are fucking compelling.
Yeah.
Like, super entertaining, super compelling. Like, if he was at a party with like 50 people.
He's had a very interesting life.
Very, very interesting. Like, he would be the guy in the middle of 50 people just for the
whole
party.
Everybody will shut up and just start listening.
That's what's going to happen when you listen to this podcast. You're gonna wish it doesn't end. Unfortunately, it ends up ending obviously at the end of it.
Yeah, but we'll have to have him back at some point.
Great guy. We are going to be at the Spartan Race Championships, which are coming up. We'll be over there in Tahoe doing some podcasting, doing some hosting. So if you're going to be there, look out for us. Come say hi to us. Joe DeCina is taking care of us very, very well. What a great guy. Love working with the dude. So great podcast you're going to listen to. Also, this month, enroll in any MAPS program, any individual program, get MAPS Prime for free, or enroll in any bundle and get MAPS Prime for free. Or lastly, if you enroll in the Super Bundle, which is 1 year, 1 year's worth of exercise programming, all planned out for you, where you go from one MAPS program to another throughout the entire year, where your body is just progressing the entire time, which already includes MAPS Prime, we will give you MAPS Prime Pro for free. So basically, enroll in any of the programs, you're going to get something for free this month. You find it all at mindpumpmedia.com. So without any further ado, here we are interviewing Joe DeCina from the Spartan Up podcast and from the Spartan Races.
Well, Joe, we should do a formal introduction. You can call me Joe. I'm actually Joseph Adam Schaefer, but I go by Adam.
All right.
But my real first name is actually Joe.
You're going to confuse everybody.
Very easy for you to remember.
My name is Sal.
Sal.
And Justin.
And you got Justin right there.
Yep. All right. Joe. Yeah.
The beefy one.
Joe, Sal, and Justin.
All right, just Adam. I gotta confuse everybody.
We're going to fuck our audience up. It's Adam. But my real birth name is Joseph.
It's Adam.
Right. Why, so how'd that happen?
So my real dad's name is Joseph, and they didn't want to call me Junior.
Got it.
And so they called me by my middle name. And then when I got old enough to where I actually wanted to change it, it was too late. Everybody. And I thought about it. You know, I had a family member that
you're
did
an
that.
Adam. Yeah.
Yeah. So
here's the thing, though. You look like an Adam. Here's what you get, you know. It's never too late, bro. You can do whatever you want.
That's true.
You know, that's how life works.
Well, as a kid, what I didn't like, here's the thing. So I was born in the 80s, early 80s, 81. And Adam was like, that was when Adam was a big name. So as a kid who was like 15, 16 years old, Adam was a very popular child name. So I hated it. So you know how we all were when you were kids growing up? You always wanted to be older. Then we get older. Then all we want to be is fucking younger. Right. So now Adam's fucking cool. I'm cool with Adam now. But when I was growing up,
I
hated it.
He was the first human, so, you know.
Yeah, right. So that was cool.
That's according to that science book.
Yeah.
That we all read.
Heavy science.
The only reason I went with Joe was I grew up in Queens, and it was a very Italian neighborhood. So as you guys were rolling your names, I thought, how am I going to remember this? I got Sal,
easy.
Got Joe, and then Justin kind of threw me off. Right. There was no Justin in our neighborhood.
Oh, really?
No. We beat the Justins
up. I'm pretty popular.
We scared him out of there.
It's kind of a...
Go to the Irish neighborhood. Yeah.
So, yeah. Joe, I'm so excited to have you here, and I have so many questions.
You were going to tell us the start of Spartan Race. Yeah, how did that get going? And first of all, I didn't know that it was twice as big as the whole Tough Mudder thing.
What did I call that thing?
They're not like a don't even count, bro. Yeah, exactly. How did you get it started? How did that all?
So go way back. So I grew up in Queens. I grew up in a town called Howard Beach, and for whatever reason, it was organized crime capital of the world. Four big bosses of five of the families lived in this town.
Wow.
So if you were the feds, you just had to tap like one phone line, you got everybody.
So you really grew up in the era of like Bronx Tale and shit. That was
Did you see Goodfellas?
Of course.
Yeah. Right.
Did I see Goodfellas? I watched it this morning.
So Goodfellas was filmed in our neighborhood.
Oh shit!
And it was about. I mean, I grew up right in the middle of it.
Wow.
So the characters it's based on were neighbors.
So you knew all those people, basically.
You knew everybody.
No shit, really.
Wow, that's cool.
So it gets we could be a whole episode talking about that right there in itself, man.
So it gets crazier because. I started a swimming pool cleaning business, and I started it at preteens, so, you know, 10, 11 years old. And the reason I started is my dad was doing real well, and he lost everything because real estate started to fall apart. He had some tough times. My neighbor was the boss, unbeknownst to me because I'm preteens, my neighbor's the boss of the Bonanno crime family, literally my next door neighbor. But I don't know this. Wow. He's just a big guy in many respects. Big house, big, just a big guy. And so... He had daughters. He takes me in under his wing, and he's like, he sees the stuff's going on in my house, and he's like, hey, why don't you clean my pool every week, and you know, I'll pay you $35 a week. And he teaches me a ton of lessons, which I think your listeners would enjoy. But anyway, he takes me in. I do a good job. He teaches me how to run a business, how to be on time, how to do all these things, go above and beyond, never ask for money. Shit could happen if you know they pay you when they want to pay you, and because a lot of people show up to do business with their hand out, and that pisses you off. And we do business with people we like, and so anyway, he taught me all those things. He introduces me to 700 clients over the next 12 years. Well, you can imagine who these people were. Many of them still in jail or dead, but they were amazing clients at the time, right? Because at that time you're growing up, it's the who you want to be. Those people,
yeah,
right. You're a product of your environment,
right.
So you're seeing all this stuff, and you want to be those people. So anyway, I'm on that path. My mother, who divorces my dad, goes into a health food store, which, you know, back in the late 70s was not very common in Queens. Walks into a health food store. Her mother's got cancer, so that's why she's diverting and from raviolis and cannolis and going to take a shot at buying some like flax seeds or something. And she walks in, and in the back of the health food store is this yogi who just came in, Swami Boa from India. He's like 70 years old or something, right? She never heard of yoga. She thinks it's a food or whatever. But she goes hook, line, and sinker. She falls into this new life in 30 minutes. She's gonna study yoga. She's going to become a yoga teacher.
She's
going to meditate. She's going to eat healthy.
She drank the Kool-Aid.
If she drank like a branch sandwich. So she gets hooked on that. And my dad and the neighbors and my customer, everybody's like, your mother's a freak. Mm-hmm. Right? So she lives about, which we end up living a mile from my dad. And she's got us now on this new path. So to your point of how Spartan started was, it was really her because... In Queens at that time, through one of the yoga connections, is a 3,000-mile run race. It's a one-mile loop. Mm. And so it's a transcendence run, they call it, right? Because you're gonna leave your body. You're going to do 3,000 miles, which is one thing, very, very difficult, but you're going to do it around a one-mile loop.
Just like, over and over again.
Over and over and over again. And completely get rid of all the demons, everything you're dealing with in life. Anyway, she introduces us to it. My sister and I don't do it because, again, we're kids, but we see it. And we learn that between that and watching my mother meditate for like 30 days straight, levitate, like all those crazy stuff, monks in our living room.
No shit.
I couldn't imagine two more contrasts.
Right. I think he's got
look like
Goodfellas for half, and then he goes to the other side. Wow.
Crazy shit. So standalone, like the only person in the neighborhood into this stuff, the only person, right? So to us, to my sister and I, she's a crackpot. To the neighbors, she's a crackpot. And you're almost embarrassed to have a mom like this. I've got pictures of Indians with wooden things around their neck and afros in our living room, and I'm you don't even, how do you explain that to like Joey and Frank?
Well,
and,
especially in your in your generation at that time too.
Yeah,
like it's getting a little more popular now, but back then that had to been like, what the fuck is
stark
going
contrast.
On?
The conversation, literally, the conversation outside of her, the conversations were raviolis, cannolis, like, did you try Sal's new Sicilian pizza? Concrete, somebody going to jail. Like that, those were the, it was never about the stuff my mom was into. So anyway, I'm going to go all over the place here, but she introduces us.
It's all right, we're with you.
This is great.
She introduces us to that run, and seeing that and seeing her and her brothers, my uncles, go to India and just start to believe in, like, because we were in a Catholic school, right? And we're in a neighborhood where everybody believed in one religion and one way of thinking. And so she just opened our mind up, even though it required like a crowbar to open somebody's mind in that neighborhood, right? But she was slowly wedging in there this idea that the mind is much more powerful than we think, right? We probably should eat healthy. Like, all this stuff is ridiculous that we're putting in our bodies. All the stuff you guys probably talk about and believe in now. But let me tell you, like, this was
revolutionary.
This was late 70s. Yeah. Maybe in California this was happening. It was not happening in Queens.
Dude, that's right? Crazy.
Yeah. So anyway, I got that in the back of my head, but I want a Cadillac, man. I want to make money. I don't fucking hang out with monks, right? At
that point. They look poor, man.
Yeah, right?
Little did you know, you could have opened up the first yoga schools and you'd be.
You don't even know. You don't even know the opportunity. Now looking back, between the magazines in that space, the business opportunities, I just wasn't applying the entrepreneurship that I had in my head. The wheels were turning in my head. Not applying it to that industry at all. Mm-hmm. I just didn't believe in it. It was great. By the way, there was like four customers. it was like nobody was into this stuff. And they were all in my living room doing yoga for free. So anyway, she introduces us to all that stuff. I stay on track with, I'm going to build a business. This neighbor's got me doing swimming pools, which eventually turns into concrete work and brick work and construction. And
then burying people.
I can't talk about that here, but you don't even know some of the stories.
I could imagine.
I could blow your audience away.
I could imagine
stories.
It's almost such a bummer that I've only got you for a couple hours today, because I feel like now that you opened this box, I feel like I don't even want to get to the Spartan race. I want to know all about your childhood, bro. That has to be.
I could get people.
You've got
on
probably
this
one of the most amazing stories ever, bro. That's crazy.
Crazy. So they trusted me because I go in the backyard. I'm not stealing anything, and I'm not wearing a wire. So I had access to all these folks' houses. Like, I could walk in and I could sleep on a couch. I could go in the refrigerator. I was that integrated with these families. And by the way, it wasn't just all those guys. I had a complete cross-section of different backgrounds, different religious beliefs, et cetera. But what it did do for me was I said to myself, a little bit like Bruce Lee over this 12-year period, wow, I'm going to take a little bit of that from that family. I'm going to discard a little bit of that. I'm not doing it. So from a sociology perspective, I had this look through this looking glass.
What an opportunity.
Like, I wish I could recreate it for my kids, because you can't get that. You just don't get that, right? No. Like, it's one thing to read up on people and maybe listen to a podcast.
It's not the same when you're in it.
Be in their houses. Yeah. And like, I had guys saying, hey, could you go take care of, you know, Lisa's pool down the street? He was banging... Right, but I'm dealing with his wife over here again. But like, it was just crazy, and I couldn't say anything. I had one guy, not going to mention any names. So I had one of my customers say, "Hey, you got to go see this. I'm trying to avoid using any names."
Oh yeah, don't worry about it.
You got to go to Mel Base in Brooklyn, and you've got to take care of my partner's pool. He wants to put a pool in. You got to go see him 12 o'clock Thursday, whatever. So I get there. Ring the bell, nothing. I'm waiting outside. It comes out later, years later. He was inside. He was killing the architect while I was outside the house.
Oh, shit. What?
Because the architect was complaining about getting paid.
Oh my shit.
So thank God I didn't, like, walk my way into the backyard or something. But so it was crazy, crazy, crazy time.
And how old are you at this time?
At that time, I'm probably 17, 18. Wow. So So anyway, build that business. My mom moves us to Ithaca, New York, because in Ithaca, they're a little more spiritual. They're a little more open-minded. This place in Queens is crazy.
That was Ithaca was like the hippie capital of that area, right?
It was a hippie. It was 5 hours north, but because Cornell University is there, Ithaca University is there, there's waterfalls. It's very more like California.
Sure, sure.
Right? So we move up there, but I still got my business in New York. So I'm going back and forth on the weekends. She's just trying to get us out of that environment. Anyway, up there, I opened my mind up even more, even though I'm being resistant to all this stuff. I'm leaving high school, graduating high school. My grades have been terrible. I've been focused on my bit. I don't need good grades. I'm not that smart. And my buddy, who I've gotten to know now at Ithaca High School, says, hey, why don't we go to Cornell? And I was like, well, one, my grades suck. I'm not going to be able to get in Cornell. But two, I got this business I'm running in Queens. Why? I don't need to go to college. And he says, no, my dad's a professor at Cornell. He'll get us in. Coming from the neighborhood, somebody says they got a connection. It makes sense. Like, they'll get us in. So we both apply. Neither of us get in. He doesn't get in. I don't get in. But now I'm interested because they didn't accept me. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I'm thinking, gee, is there a way to get in? He says, well, my dad said we can go extramural. We don't have to take regular classes like everybody else. We could take just three classes, while all the kids that got accepted could take five classes. We do well in those three classes. They don't count towards anything, but if we do well, they'll accept us. They have to accept us because we've proven that we could handle Cornell University. So I was like, all right, let's do that. But if we're going to do it, I'll go to St. John's in Queens during the summer while I'm running my business. I'll do some night classes. I'll learn how to study because I haven't studied. My SAT scores suck. He says, fuck that. He says, let's go to Vegas for the summer and party because we're going to buckle down in September. Why would we work hard during the summer? Complete divergent in ideas and this whole concept of being successful in life, which is something we preach at Spartan, right? That was a key moment. He went left, I went right. So I go to Queens, I run my business, I go to St. John's.
Oh, so you chose not to go with him. Did he go to Vegas?
I didn't take the cookie. He went to Vegas.
Oh, wow.
So
big decision to make at that young age, man.
Big decision to make, and it ties to something that I'm really focused on called delayed gratification, which we'll talk about in a minute. But So I decide to study because they turned me away. And so now I'm—
You're driven.
I'm driven. I'm focused, right? So I study. I do well. We meet back in September up in Ithaca. We buckle down. I'm so serious about going to school now because I've never really worked on school ever. I wasn't a good student. I've got like a briefcase. I've got like—
Official.
I've got a button-down shirt. I'm going to be serious here. And we do our three classes. And we do well. He even does well coming off of the haze of Vegas for the summer. Neither of us get accepted again. And so he diverts and goes to UNLV. And I'm like, fuck this. I'm going to do it again. Right? They're not going to turn me away. I'm going to do it again. So I do another semester. I do well. But the problem is my credits are falling behind because everybody else is doing five classes.
Right.
So I do it again. I reapply. No go. They turn me away. I do it again, third semester.
Yeah, you did this.
Now I'm on my third time, and they turn me away. So I'm done. I'm going to New York. I'm going to run my business is doing great now. We're building houses. We're doing all kinds of stuff. I don't even need school. My mother, who's upset that she's going to lose her son, right, because I'm going back to New York. I'm done in Ithaca for good. She says, you know, I teach yoga to this lady who's at Cornell. Why don't you go talk to her? My mother was the last person that I would have leaned on for a connection, right? She wasn't like that anymore.
She's too busy talking to monks.
If I needed a connection,
she's not strong-arming anybody. Why am I? I got way better connections for
a yogi or something. She'd be the call. But she, like, so anyway, she has me meet Professor Anita Racine. I remember the meeting like yesterday, and I go meet her, and I'm already made my mind up. I'm done. They've embarrassed me three semesters in a row. Didn't let me in. I'm way behind on credit, so I won't even graduate on time if I get in. Sits me down, and she says, hey, I took a look at your grades. Your mother told me a little bit about what you're going through. I understand you want to give up. She says, I run within Cornell. Cornell University is pretty amazing, unlike many schools, in that it has all these different topics of study. So you could study. You could be a veterinarian. You could be an engineer. You could study literature. One of the programs they have is a textile department. So she said, I run the textile department. I've got 96 women in the program. I've got no men. And, you know, we want to get some diversity. We want to get men in here. Do you like textiles? And I was like, I love textiles, right? 96 women. But I don't know what a textile is. I love the idea of 96 women in a group and no men. So she actually takes me in. And I end up doing the next 2.5 years studying textiles. So if we were to stop the podcast right now and go see a movie, I could tell you exactly what era that movie's from based on hemlines, because I know all about ladies' clothing.
It's a unique skill.
It's a unique skill. And my wife does come to me and say, hey, does this look good? So that's good. I've got an edge there. But so I get accepted, and I get through it, and I graduate Cornell while I'm running the business back in Queens. When I graduate Cornell, and you guys didn't ask me this question, so just stop me at some point.
No, keep going. Yeah.
I'm rambling here. But when I graduate Cornell, I meet an Italian guy in the entrepreneur. You're allowed to take classes outside of textiles. I'm studying all kinds of things. One of the classes I take is an entrepreneurship class. I meet this Italian who's awesome, and he takes a liking to me right away because I'm from an Italian neighborhood. I'm Italian background, so we click right away. I buy him a bottle of Sambuca, and he says to me, what are you doing? Like, why are you running this? What are you going to do after you graduate? You should go to Wall Street. And I don't know anything about finance at this point. I do know that there was the 87 crash and everybody lost a lot of money. So I assume nobody's making money there. And he says, no, you've got to hustle. You're driven. You got to go to Wall Street. So anyway, I graduate. What he said's in the back of my head. I'm running my business. I'm a big man on campus, figuratively, in Queens, because I got all these customers, right? All these wise guys. I've got all this political capital. I can walk in anybody's house. I'm making money. We're building houses. I've got trucks. Trucks always make you feel like a man, right? I got listening to the truck start in the morning. I got heavy equipment, bulldozers, backhoes. I got a girlfriend. Everything's
great. How old are you right around this time now?
So now I'm like 21.
Oh, 20, man. 20,
yeah. 20, on top of the world.
On top of the world. Yeah. It's a $1 million business, right? So I'm not going to Wall Street. I'd be going backwards.
Right.
You're going to start all over.
I'm going to start all over. But I'm not really putting my education to work, right? I'm still running this business where all these guys and girls that graduated are going off and going to go build careers. So this Italian guy I met, he's probably 60 at the time, continues to call me every month on the month. Every month for 5 years.
Wow.
What are you doing? How are you doing? How am I going to get you to Wall Street? And I'm just blowing them off. Because my business is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And maybe I got married to this girl, whatever. Everything's going well in my life. Why would I? So anyway, we're about 5 years into those phone calls. And which anybody listening should take, you got to find mentors in life. You got to find older people that always want to help. Just like you guys are, you're doing the podcast to help people, right? Mm-hmm. They're always willing to help as long as you take their advice. People don't want to waste time giving advice that no one listens to. So anyway, he calls me 5 years in and he says, listen, if you're not going to take my advice, he goes, just buy this stock. And I'd never bought a stock before. I didn't even have a stock account. And he gives me this stock tip. And I've got to go. It's a drug company. And I've got to go, a pharmaceutical, to pick up a big check, like a $140,000 check from a customer that owed me money. I finished the job and this final payment. And it's free money at that point. It's going right in the bank. Hmm. And the guy I'm getting the money from is a pharmacist. So it's obvious to me that, I'll ask the pharmacist when I pick up my check about this pharmaceutical company the guy's telling me to buy the stock in. I walk into the house. He's towel drying. He just got out of the shower. This guy's name's Eli. And he says, and I say, listen, my buddy just told me I should buy this stock, Syntex. And he says, I can't believe you're bringing it up. He goes, I was just in the shower, and I'm going to buy 10,000 shares of that today. So he sits me down, and he walks me through this whole thing. You're not married. You're still making money. It'd be a great time to take risks like this. You know, if you lost the money, you'd recover pretty quickly. Later in life, you've got kids. You can't take risks like this. Convinces me to take the whole $140,000 check and plunk it down. Pretty bold move,
that's
right?
That's a bold move.
21 years old, you got that? Yeah, that's...
No, now I'm 25.
Okay, 25.
Right? Yeah. So I do it. I take the whole check. I listen to him. I plunk it down. Well, the next day, the company gets taken over. It's up $10. I make $100,000.
Right away.
Right away. One day, 24 hours.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm like, this is the greatest business ever.
I wasn't pouring cement.
Man, I didn't have to start the trucks. This is unbelievable, right? I'm selling the business. I'm going to Wall Street.
You're kidding me. Yeah, just like that.
So I sit down with my guys who were Eastern Europeans. I had been very, very fortunate. The reason the business did so well is I found Polish that were coming over, you know, back in the late 80s, mid to late 80s, that were escaping. You know, the walls were up. I don't know. You guys were born later. But they were tough motherfuckers because they grew up in tough times, right?
And so they work hard.
Nothing like they never asked for vacation. They never asked for more. They just wanted more hours. Just give us more hours. Mm-hmm. And so that was the natural. You know, I just sat down with them and I said, "Look, guys, I'm making a pivot here. I'm going to Wall Street. Why don't you guys take the business, pay me overtime, whatever you can? This business is still going, and they're multimillionaires now.
No shit.
That's awesome.
What a cool story.
Awesome to swing by there 25 years later and see it's thriving and they're crushing it.
Oh, very good.
So I go to Wall Street and I got to take like 40 steps backwards, right? Because I got to interview and then I got to take a $30,000 a year job and then I'm getting shit on and yelled at and going to get coffee for people.
Talk about the size of your balls to do that.
Yeah. Dude, let me tell you, my balls shrunk because I remember the day, I can't even believe I'm saying this on camera. And I remember the day I was crying because I was like, I could walk in anybody's house, people that kill people for a living, and you're shitting on you, motherfucker.
Right.
But I had to take it. But I rebuilt myself. Hard to rebuild yourself in a brand new industry. I rebuilt myself, and I was really fortunate because I was in an industry that I had no experience in. Right, hard to do, like you said. But what was awesome about it was I saw the inefficiencies of that business because I wasn't from it. I was looking really as an outsider. Everybody else was in it. This is the way things have always been done. This is the way we do it.
Right.
I was looking at it saying, you guys are idiots. Like,
New perspective.
You're doing this completely wrong. So I started my own business on Wall Street. We crushed it. Had a 10-year run. And I'm getting to your original question, which is how I'm
loving the story to this. It explains so much why Spartan is kicking the shit out of everybody too now.
Yeah.
I mean, now it makes a lot of sense.
It was so easy. I called a couple of guys from the neighborhood. I was like, hey, this competitor just started up. Can you whack him?
So that's when you finally used the resources.
It's so easy to succeed in business when you have those kind of connections, right?
Yeah, we'll bring in the muscle.
Yeah.
You know, that whole thing I said about paying us to do some work, like, go ahead and scratch that. We'll just go ahead and do some favors for you, bro. I see that.
No problem. Johnny's going to love that. So where were we? So
Wall Street, you started a business.
Yeah, 10-year run right now.
Meet my wife, and I decide we're selling the firm. We're going to sell the Wall Street firm, and we're going to Vermont. I want a farm. I want chickens, cows, kids, and I'm done. So sell the business, move up to Vermont, buy a farm, start having babies, and I retired for like 3 days. Literally, I pace him back and forth.
Now, did you sell everything in Wall Street? I mean, you're done with it completely, and you decide it's family time for me, and I'm going to sell. And how old are you right here?
So now it is 17 years ago. I'm 30. I'm 30 years old.
Okay.
31 years old. Oh, no. Hang on a second. Sorry. I'm 35 years old.
Okay.
Yep. So I'm 35, 36, and I'm on the farm, and I'm done. And that lasts about 3 days. Because I'm full of energy. And I want to get stuff. I want to make stuff happen, and I say, you know what? Next to the swimming pool business in Queens was this great business still there called Russo's on the Bay. It's a wedding business, probably one of the most lucrative wedding businesses in all of New York. They'll charge a couple of $100,000 to do a wedding, and they're pumping them out like there's four weddings on a Friday night. There's
must be the company that handles most celebrities.
It was handling the celebrities that were my customers.
Those kind of celebrities.
So just it's become a machine. The food's great. They know what they're doing, but it's a little tacky. It feels a little bit like Goodfellas. I'm sure I'll get in trouble for saying that, but. But they crush it, and so that was in the back of my head. I want to be in the wedding business, maybe on this farm I have. So I start a wedding business where you can get married on a farm. We get married, my wife and I get married on the farm. We're the first one, and it starts to work. But I find myself in this weird spot because I have no room for guests, and I have no kitchen, right? So the general store in town comes up for sale, and I'm like, you know what? I'll buy the general store. We'll turn that into the kitchen for the wedding business, and it'll be this cool, quaint general store anyway when people come to the weddings. So I call some buddies on Wall Street, and I'm like, look, you really won't get it. Why don't you invest, and we'll buy some of the things in the town. We'll buy this general store. We'll do some cool, fun stuff. Because if you're sitting on Wall Street, sitting on a trading desk typing all day, it'd be kind of cool mentally to think, oh, I own some acreage up in Vermont. Sure. I've got a general store. And
right.
So we ended up buying a large part of the town over time. And definitely pissed some people off. If I had to do it again, I would have did it differently. But so we bought that. We bought another farm. We built a bunch of rooms. And we built this wedding business. One of the ways to drive traffic to all this stuff we had was races, putting on races. Because I was participating. I didn't tell you this, but while I was on Wall Street, I was participating in races. I was doing
What kind of races were they back then?
So,
because this is well before any of
this is well before. So it's like it's mid 90s. I just get to Wall Street and like an elevator in one of the buildings is busted. So I got to take the stairs. So I'm in the and I did construction, like push wheelbarrows, mix cement. I'm in the stair. I was fit, and I see this guy carrying dumbbells in the stairs, and he's a Cover Men's Health guy. Looks it and actually is it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Shredded. Sweating, 6-pack, 8-pack, fantastic looking guy. And I end up walking upstairs with him while he's got the dumbbells, and we start talking, and he's like, hey, meet me in the stairs. I work out every morning. Come, you know, we'll work out together. So I start working out with him, and he brings me to an adventure race. I don't know what an adventure race is, but it's fucking awesome because it feels like I'm mixing cement again. I'm not mm-hmm. sitting on a trading desk, right? I'm kayaking. I never kayaked before. I'm biking, I'm running. This is unbelievable. Like, we're at war. This is like Game of Thrones. It feels I'm alive, right?
Right, right.
And so that was 3 hours. That was a 3-hour race we did together, mid-90s. So just because of my personality, I'm like, what's tougher than this? I got to do something bigger. I didn't win it or anything, but I want to test myself.
Right.
Well, you could do 24-hour, but you got to be prepared for that. You got to sign me up. I'm doing 24-hour. So signs me up for 24-hour, do that. Hook in Malibu, actually. It was fantastic. Fell in love with it. I was like, all right, I need the toughest race in the world. What do you got? You can't do that. You got to have a team. You got to train. I said, just fucking sign me up. I got to fucking do it. I wanted, before I changed my mind. And he's like, well, the Iditarod, you know, the dog sled race.
Oh, my God. Get the fuck out of here.
But you could do it by foot. So, like, sign me up.
So instead of having the dogs pull you,
no dogs,
you're
right?
Going to make it harder and you're going
to... Yes.
You're a maniac, sir.
So, yeah. So again, I don't know what I'm getting into, which is the best way to do things, because if you know too much and you study it, and I'm just an idiot that way, right? So he's like, well, I'll try to convince this team. You need a team of four. I'll try to convince these three people. If you're paying the bill, they might take you on, but, you know, it's dangerous for them. If you're, like, a loafer and you quit in the middle of the, you know, waist-deep snow in Alaska, you're going to fuck everybody. So I got to go through a series of tests with these three people for months to make sure that they're okay with me coming on their team, even if I'm paying the bill. So anyway, I hold my own. I convinced them enough. It's probably more that I was paying the bill than it was my athletic ability, because I'm not that athletic. And they take me in, and they decide that we're going to do a series of races to get ready for that race. Kind of like a boxer would go into the ring and knock a couple of guys out to feel good.
Sure.
And these are going to be easy, like, gimmies, right? Well, one of them is in northern Quebec, and this is just going to be a gimme. And it was not a fucking gimme. Even these guys said this was harder than the race we were going to Alaska. Minus 30. It's got to be 7 days. It starts out with ice boating across the St. Lawrence River. Ice boating. I don't know what ice boating is.
Yeah.
Right? By the way, they've checked all the boxes for the organizers that I'm certified and all these. I've never done any of this. I don't.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. Certified.
Climbing.
What is that? Is it a boat made out of ice or what? The fuck?
You're going across. You're in the water and mini glaciers are smashing into you while you're going across. And you've got to then jump off the boat and run with spike shoes on the snow ice to push the boat through, right? So you're sometimes waist deep in the water. This is like you know, cold, freezing, cold fucking
yeah,
water,
hypothermia
right?
type yeah. shit right here.
Crazy shit. So that's the start. Like, gun goes off in the water, getting shit. Smashed
at
into,
that moment in your head, like, you got to be thinking, what the fuck what did the I fuck sign?
Like, yeah, the glaciers, this, you know, shit the size of like buses are hitting the boat. So anyway, we were out there for 6 or 7 days, and that was a game changer for me, because when you're out there, what goes through your head, and this is what we try to recreate with Spartan, and we're going to, when I get to the end of this whole thing, it'll answer your question, which is you forget about like payroll, you forget about relationship problems, you forget about everything except water, food, and shelter. Like, man, I just want to get out of this boat. I just want to get home. I just, right? Like, the frame of reference completely changes, and it's a very refreshing place to be, because all that stuff drops off your shoulders drop, and it's just, I just want to live, right? I just want to.
We talk about this all the time on the show, of being ultimately present, right? Like, just being, I mean, it forces.
You have no choice.
Yeah, it forces you, it humbles the fuck out of you, forces you to be just mindful and present and realize, like, God, how simple.
Well, I think it's also powerful and transcendent, because you realize just how capable your body and your mind truly is. And then we go back to your regular life, your normal stresses and stuff are trivial. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at the emails and the whatever, and you're like, that's not a big deal. I was waist high in, you know, snow water, and, you know, I had no food. And now this email, who gives a shit? It's not a big deal. That's why some of the calmest people you ever meet are people that deal with that stuff on a regular basis. You know, I used to, you know, I've met, you know, when you meet people who actually, there's a lot of people who think they're tough guys, you know, they want to fight all the time at the bar. You ever go hang out with actual fighters who get their ass kicked all the time and fight? They're the calmest people at the bars, because they don't need to do any of that stuff. So,
no,
pretty amazing.
No doubt about it. And to that point, as I'm going through all this, it's like all that the stuff my mother was saying over the years about the meditation and the yoga and the fasting and everything that I wasn't accepting, right? You're out there in waist deep snow, my eyelashes are frozen, right? Literally frozen. And everything she was saying was right. The other interesting thing coming out of that race in northern, we almost died in that race, which is, we'll do another podcast at some point, and I'll tell you about that story. But I recapped the whole race. I wrote it all down, and I sent it to all my buddies, a lot of them Wall Street buddies. And I remember this very, very successful guy, still a great buddy, wrote back and said, shit, I thought I had a tough day today, because I couldn't find a parking spot near the grocery stores. I had to walk like 2 blocks carrying 4 bags. And I thought to myself, exactly what you just said, right? Like, that frame of reference of, hang on a second, that would have been a big deal prior to going and doing something tough. So it's really important that all of us take ourselves out of our comfort zone and go way past any perceived limits, because it just makes everything else in life simple. Like all the experiences we could talk about here and all the stuff I've done or you guys have done, what it does for me in an airplane, like you could be upset Wi-Fi is not working. You could be upset that you're stuck in this tiny little thing. You had to pay for baggage, whatever. I don't get upset, because I say to myself, if the plane lands, I've won.
Mm-hmm.
I just want the plane to land.
Right?
Because there's other options. The plane might not land.
right.
So,
whole new perspective.
It's one of the reasons why sometimes you have, like, my parents are immigrants. And when you were talking about the Polish, you know, guys that you worked with, it reminded me a lot of my father, my grandfather. I mean, they're Sicilian immigrants, and they were poor. And it's just thing, you know, they worked so hard.
Grateful
and they were
to
so,
work. Grateful to have
well,
work,
they were
right?
just so grateful for opportunities to do these, you know, things. And they never complained about being tired or whatever. They were genuinely happy. And they just had a different, you know, different point of reference. And, you know, it's interesting, because humans, we evolved being challenged quite a bit. And it's relatively recently that we've got all these comforts, as, you know, climate control. You know, I don't have to worry about freezing or being too hot. I have water whenever I want it. We have so much water, we take a shit in it, for God's sakes, you know?
Right.
Well, we got food whenever we want, any flavor we want of food. I can learn any piece of information I want at my fingertips. And so it makes sense that, you know, races like yours and challenges in, you know, in that sphere are gaining more popularity, because it's something that we need. You know, it's almost like we desire and we need it. We don't have it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And we know something's missing. You know, we know something's missing. We got all the stuff that we could ever want. people aren't starving anymore. People aren't dying from infections like they used to. But people aren't happy, and they can't figure out why. Why am I not happy? I have everything I want.
And perspective.
Maybe it's because we just don't get challenged, you know, like we used to. We don't know what that feels like. Because it's, you know, similar to what you're talking about. People have experiences like that when they travel. You talk to somebody who travels to another country, especially a third world nation, they come back and they're changed because it changes the perspective of things. They realize now when they were complaining about their house being small and they got too much shit and they come home, they're like, I can't believe I have all this space and all this crap that I don't need.
Yeah, I have to go kill my food for dinner, you know, and like the process, all that takes. It's just like we just take all this stuff for granted.
And there's a piece of fitness, you know, we're obviously a fitness podcast. There's a piece of fitness there that, you know, we talk a lot about the, you know, some of the drawbacks of fitness where people, you know, they go into working out and they beat themselves up too much and they hurt their bodies and they don't take care of themselves and they don't train because they love themselves. They train because they hate themselves. But sometimes I think the message gets a little twisted and then people think that the challenging part of fitness isn't important and that you shouldn't test yourself. You shouldn't go push yourself to your limit because it's not always good to do that. But there's a lot more benefit that you get from it. And it's not necessarily the physical. You know, that race you did where you almost died in the snow or whatever in the water, you didn't come back more fit physically necessarily from it. You probably were a little damaged. I'm sure you felt like shit for a little while afterwards. But the emotional and mental gains you got from that, you couldn't have gotten otherwise.
No, it helps you push. It helps you push further later.
Absolutely,
things, right? Whether it's lifting a gym or whether it's dealing with a business or a relationship or whatever.
Who are your biggest? I guess the market that really jives with your races. The kind of people that really enjoy doing those races and sign up. Of course, you have the hardcore athletes that do it, but I got to assume that a majority are just people who just want to challenge themselves. And
I had a 696 pound guy come out and do one of our races.
You're kidding me?
What? Yeah, I had my mother in law, who's in her mid 60s, knocked out our race in Tokyo last week. So I had an 81 year old in Shanghai 3 weeks ago come out. We've got I've got 7-year-olds, 12-year-olds, like they all come out and do it. But if you said, Joe, who's the biggest audience? It's obviously CrossFit. It's obviously military.
Sure.
It's anybody that's hitting the gym and wants to be fit. That's the bulk of it, but that's only 30-40% when I say bulk. Mm-hmm. The balance is just anybody that's saying, you know what, I'm not happy. To your point, I'm not happy. There's got to be some other way to define myself instead of a cubicle and some handbag I'm purchasing, right, to say that I'm cool. And so, you know, tens of thousands of tattoos logoed on their body because they want to be – who doesn't want to be a Spartan? Forget about our brand for a second. Like, who wouldn't want to be a Spartan?
Sure.
Define it, right? That sure. Just has all the values and qualities that you'd want.
Mm. So you were telling us, like, how many races happen a year?
So 200 events a year, 30 countries, a million participants.
Holy cow. Holy cow. And where's the growth? You guys are televised, and you're seeing a lot of growth there? A
couple of television shows, working on more additional shows. Big growth overseas. Obviously, I just did 2 years in Asia with my family, specifically to grow out Asia for Spartan. So China's going to be our biggest market.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. I can't even imagine. That market will trump ours.
I got a funny one for you. So Japan was the hardest market for us to crack, which you would think, sitting in this room, Japan would be easiest, right? Those are tough people. As a matter of fact, Ninja Warrior came from Japan.
Yeah, so obstacle races in general. Yeah.
Came from Japan. Yeah. So that was my first go-to.
Right.
Could not crack that market. I had to have focus groups. We had to sit around with 30 Japanese and show them the videos. And they all winced at the barbed wire. And they weren't, we got to change the product. And we're not sure. Nobody's going to be interested. I said, fuck it. I'm moving there. So I moved my family to Japan.
Oh, shit.
To figure it out. I landed there. I had a race open within 3 months. It sold out 2 months later. All Japanese. I just had the race last weekend. Japanese are going crazy for it. But here's the really funny story. I get a call from a company that makes Hello Kitty. You guys know Hello Kitty?
Yeah, of course.
I don't know what Hello Kitty is, right? Bring me into this thing. They sit me down on a pink chair. I'm in the president's room. And
that's going to be crazy for a guy who doesn't know Hello Kitty, right?
I don't know what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
and they're showing me mock-ups of the Spartan logo with Hello Kitty. And
no way.
And they want to do, and I'm like,
are you insulted at this point? Or you don't know?
I can't be, right?
Because, yeah, they're inviting me.
That's a huge brand, too. I mean, Hello Kitty is massive.
So, yeah. So anyway, wow. I'm driving a minivan. I got Hello Kitty.
They're trying to soften.
So
up
what
a
happened
bit.
In that meeting? They sit you down.
So a lot of it was in Japanese. I'm still trying to figure out what they said, but I did see the photos of the logo with Hello Kitty, and they want to do something. Well, I think my audience would revolt. They'd probably kill me if we did something with Hello Kitty.
But, holy cow!
It was really funny.
That is great.
So you seemed. I mean, it sounds like you were born with this kind of drive and attitude. I mean, obviously, look. I mean, hindsight, right? 2020, all the decisions you made were the right ones or whatever. But at the moment, it would sound crazy to a lot of people. All the pivots you did in situations where you were already killing it, you were already doing great. You know, you made it, and now you said, "No, I want to start over and do something else." And you've interviewed some extremely successful people. Mm-hmm. Do you see that attitude? Is that a common attitude amongst these people where they're just like, I want to, you know, this is my new thing. I'm challenged here. I'm going to tackle it. I'm going to do it.
So I interview a lot of people specifically on success. So that is a question I try to dive into. Like, what makes a person successful? And I think the one attribute is not really caring what other people think.
Right.
And so that's, forget about what other people think. And so those pivots, why would somebody not pivot? Let's talk about that for a second. Why would you not change what you're doing? Well, one, you care what other people think. Two is you're afraid. Like, is it not going to work?
Fear is a big one.
Fear is a big one. And so the great samurai, and I got some great stories for you. I got to tell you about Japan. But the great samurai, what they would do when they went to bed every night to eliminate fear, because they're going to go into battle and probably die, was to burn everything in their mind. So in their mind, they burn their family, they burn their possessions, everything. They were basically dead. They lost everything. And if they can come to terms with that, well, then you're no longer fearful when you're in the battle, right? Because I've already dealt with it. I dealt with it last night. It's all gone. Mm. So now what? What's your next move, right? You're not going to scare me. And so I'm sure fighters, MMA, if that's the trick. If you could just think, what am I afraid of? And then come to terms with, okay, so.
Let's say that happens, right? Here's my biggest fear. That happens. Now what?
Now what? What's your next move? So if I lost that $140,000, what Eli was saying to me when he sat me down was, it's okay, you're making money, you're young. It'd be much worse if you had five kids and your back was against the wall and you're trying to make, you know, ends meet, but that's not the situation. So I do a lot of upside, downside decision making all day long. What's the upside? What's the downside? The upside is, if this works, going to Wall Street, I'm going to make a lot more money in a lot less time. And for me, it was about making money at that moment in time. That was my life's purpose, because if I had money, that was a tool for me to do some really cool things.
Great way to put that.
Right? And if it doesn't work, well, I already got a business. I'll go back to doing this, right? So I don't know. It's easier for me to pivot than maybe most people, because I use that quick analysis, upside, downside decision making. And one last thing, sorry to interrupt you, is life is too short for me to be stuck doing one thing. I want to do a lot of things.
Right.
And I didn't want to be a pool guy for the rest of my life. Not that there's anything wrong with that. That was not my plan. And I didn't want to be sitting in front of a computer screen. That was not my lifelong plan. And so maybe deep down inside somewhere there was this purpose. I want to get people healthy. I didn't know that was in there, but if you do go out and make some money, well, then you can afford to do some cool things. Like, it was actually a wise guy that told me this. Sat me down at his long wooden table in Queens in the house. I was just done working in his backyard, and we were probably eating some mozzarella and tomatoes on a semolina Italian bread. And he said to me, the most important, surprising coming from him, the most important thing in life is to help people, right? So, maybe he was feeling bad for some of the things he did. I don't know. But it stuck with me. So I don't know if that answers your question.
And so, now you have a business that does that. So you get to do both.
I'm very, very fortunate. You guys are very fortunate.
Absolutely.
In that we get paid to help people. And we get people thanking us, right? And so I got to kiss the ground I walk on. It's unbelievable.
So knowing that, what scares you now? What are the things now you look at and say, okay, here's the fears I need to work on, and
Are there any? Yeah, I was going to say, are there any things that...
Yeah, so yesterday I put... So we just flew back from Tokyo. I packed all the family up. Our job was done when the race went off.
You have kids, yeah?
Four children.
Oh, good for you.
And I put them on a plane yesterday morning at 5 a.m. And the thing that scared me was having the whole family on a plane.
Oh, yeah.
Right? God forbid.
Right.
And so that scares me. Other than that, like, you know, a lot of Italian guys used to say to me, you came to this country with two shoes, I'll go home with two shoes. Like, you know what I mean? I saw lots of guys make it big and then fall, you know, success is like a moment in time. Mm. And so you just got to know that same ladder you go up, you're probably coming down. So I'm not really fearful of that. It's really my family.
Mm-hmm. Something you said that kind of stuck with me, that reminded me a little bit of an experience I had getting into the fitness industry was when you got into some of these new industries, you didn't know that you couldn't, or you didn't know how hard it was. Like, you know, had you been in Wall Street or had you been in that world, you would have known how crazy it was to try and jump in and be successful. But you had no idea. You went in there and it's like, I'm going to do this. I had a similar experience, you know, running health clubs. I mean, I was 19 years old. They gave me this big gym to run. And I didn't know that it was a hard thing to do. I just did it. Looking back, I thought it was, oh my God, that was crazy. And sometimes it's better. Sometimes I think it's better doing something and not having any idea what the risks are and what the challenges are.
Well, one of our...
No, I was going to say, a guy like you, I would think too, something that it took me a while, it took me a couple businesses. We're all serial entrepreneurs. So we all have that in common. I started to realize really quick that the more, you know, scary situations or starting over situations I put myself in, the better I became too. I think my biggest fear is getting comfortable and staying in a business or the same thing for so long. I like to be challenged, and the best of me comes out when I put that. Do you find that about yourself too?
I think it's all of us. Yeah, not as a human being, you mentioned it earlier in the way we've evolved on this planet. I think our best does come out when we're pushed, when our back's against the wall. I was gonna say something, but I forgot. But let's dive down that road. So I build these businesses in Vermont. I build the general store, the farm, the bed and breakfast, all around this wedding and event industry. And what I say to myself is, I need a young Joe to come and run that general store. I need a young person to come run that farm. I need a young person to come run the bed and breakfast. And I'm going to give them a leg up that I didn't have when I was starting. The mortgage is already paid for. The cows are already purchased. There's already inventory in the general store. And it's going to be easy. I just got to find some kid with guy or girl with fire in their belly to run these businesses. Home run. I wish I was given that opportunity
right,
when
right.
I was starting.
Not as
right?
easy as you think, though.
Yeah, I had to steal stuff to, like, I had no, right? So, So I get people over a decade. I get people to come in, run the general store, run the farm. And what I found was when the going got tough, they quit, right? And so why did they – like, so I'm analyzing, why was that happening over and over and over? I'll tell you why. Because their back wasn't against the wall, because they weren't uncomfortable, because the cows were paid for, the mortgage was paid, right? Actually, what makes us successful, which is to your point, is the adversity,
right?
The mortgage. The fact that you told all your friends you were going to do this, right? So you got to get out of your comfort zone to be successful. Mm. You have to. That's what drives success.
100%.
If this was easy and you just walked in and everything was paid for and there were advertisers for your podcast, you actually wouldn't be successful.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a nice metaphor for your races.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, right.
They're not easy.
No, they're not. And purposely designed to I feel like I've got to recreate what happened to me in Alaska and Northern Canada that I described earlier. And I've got hours to do that to somebody. Wow. So people look
Is there
at me,
ice boating.
No, ice boating.
No ice boating. But we do have winter races. Funny enough, we're very big in Eastern Europe, really big in Eastern Europe. And the reason we're big in Eastern Europe is because of my guys that I had the swimming pool business with.
You're kidding me.
Yeah. And so they and some others from Slovakia helped me set up the business there. And our first winter race, because they're the most badass people on earth, right?
Yeah.
Was over there. I said, who's going to do a winter race? They did it. Wow. I went out there and did it with – it was in the snow.
Wow.
It was awesome.
You still do the races?
I still go out and do the races.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm not competitive, but I go out and do them.
Oh, that's insane. That's
so, okay. So you did the Quebec one. It sounded like – I think you said you had like two more races. when did the company take off first, and how did that happen? Where did it?
So I do all these races, and in the back of my mind, because I'm like you guys, serial entrepreneur, I'm thinking, you know, you're out there paddling for 24 hours, you got nothing to do. I'm thinking I'm gonna put on some races. So the first race I put on is actually in the British Virgin Islands, and I'm gonna do a 350-mile event. I'm gonna put on. It's gonna include paddling. It's going to include swimming, sailing. It's going to be unbelievable. And I bring in my friends now that I've been racing with for some years, and we put it on. And it's a disaster. It's a disaster on a few fronts. Financially, there's not a lot of people that want to do 350-mile, 8-day races. So there's just not enough entry fees to pay the bills. But in addition to that, I lost a guy, literally lost a guy, who was working for us and setting ropes. And apparently he was on a dinghy, on a little boat, and a storm rolled in, and the engine didn't start, and he drifted away. Well, 8 days later, I find out from our staff that we're missing, I forget his name.
Oh, shit.
Mike or whatever, right? How the fuck are you missing? So 8 days later, you're telling me? Well, we thought he was on the island, and when the race was over, anyway, I got the Coast Guard involved. Coast Guard triangulates where somebody last saw him, the storms that rolled in, and they estimate that if he's alive, he's in Tobago, which is 150 miles away. They take the choppers, Coast Guard shot, and they find him. He's on the island. He drifted 150 amazing. Miles, and it's literally like an 8-day survivor where he's living out there eating crabs and drinking bottles of water that drifted to Little Tobago.
No shit.
Wow.
So that was the end of that format of race.
That could have ended horribly.
I lost a guy and $500,000. So that
shit. Yeah.
That's gnarly.
So then the next format, I tried a whole bunch of formats of events. And in 2010, after losing millions of dollars attempting this and trying to get it to work, sitting around the kitchen, came up with the name Spartan, changed the format to three different distances, 3 mile, 8 mile, and 13 mile. And the thinking there was, when I go into a season racing, we start out with something easy right after, you know, the holidays, you get a little plump, and then you're coming out and you're like, I want to do something at this distance, and then midsummer you're doing something, and then you finish it in like October, November with something big. That's your big event. And when you do three events minimum a year, what I was finding over this decade of racing was you actually get in shape. It changes your habits because you're always training for something. If you just have one event a year on the calendar, it just doesn't work. So the idea was, all right, we'll call it Spartan. Three distances, people space it out that way.
Very smart.
Yeah, smart.
And it's going to have a philosophy to it, right? Because my mom had this deep philosophy to all this stuff. It's going to be around health and wellness. We'll never have a brand that's unhealthy as a sponsor. Mm. That was the idea. Again, it's 2010, 10 years of losing money doing this. It's probably not going to work. The most I'm going to invest in this new idea is $50,000. That's it. And we'll take a swing at it because I'm done losing money in this. And it's just, I don't know if I can get it to work. Well, $50,000 quickly turns into $150,000, which turns into.
Which always does, right? Yeah, we know that.
Yeah. And then it turns into literally $300,000 a month on my credit cards. $300,000 a month.
What is it that's costing so much money to try and get this to work?
Well, I'm an idiot. Right, I'm a complete idiot, and we talked about it before. I subscribe to Fire Ready Aim, as opposed to Aim Ready Fire. Right, but that's what
you're in good my company. Mantra. Yeah, that's you're in good company right now. Yeah.
Welcome to the team.
So I had fired, and we launched an event or two. And when you're in the event space, and you launch an event, and you say on July 2nd we're having this race. Well, you're having that race whether there's 10 people there or 10,000 people there. Right, if you have integrity and you want to honor the ticket you sold, you're either going to lose a ton of money or break even. Like, if you don't get people there, you're dead. And so, the idiot that I am, we launched in Vermont, which was the wrong place to launch, and then coming out of Vermont, we quickly went to like Canada, and then from Canada we went to UK. And when if you're smart about launching a brand, you build rings around where
you cluster them.
Yeah,
right.
But I'm not smart, so I've got to plunk down money to market and put on these events everywhere, and I'm juggling credit cards. And I remember my bookkeeper walks into the office one day, and it's probably 2011, and she's like, "You're almost out of money. Like, what the fuck are you doing?" And I remember thinking, I just worked like 23 years straight between the swimming pool business, construction business, Wall Street, and I've blown all this fucking money in a year and a half on trying to make this thing work. And I said to her, I said, I'm telling you, there's something here. I know there's something here. And I called a bunch of Wall Street buddies and I said, look, you're not going to understand this business. I have no business plan. I have no evaluation, but I need money. And I need money by Monday. And or I'm dead kind of thing.
I love
right?
this attitude.
Right? And so they sent me money. And they're doing very well because of it. They were awesome. And so I remember the day it turned was probably 2013. So 2 years later, I remember the young kid that was doing our accounting walks in and says, hey, we had 1,300 registrations yesterday. There's no fucking way we had 13.
Yesterday?
Yeah.
As in like, one day?
One day. And I was like,
wow.
But, you know, we were averaging. I'm making up numbers, but just to give you an sure. idea of, yeah. of we were averaging like 80 a day, 90, right?
And all of a sudden.
And it was like, there. And I, you fucked up the numbers, right? And no, it's 13. And we went back and forth and we looked and it was like, wow. And so I think what happened, I think it just took a while. Like when you don't cluster and don't build rings, it just took a while to create a network effect where all of a sudden everybody knew
sure.
what this thing was. And so
it always shocks me at just how long a freaking overnight success takes, you know what I mean?
17 oh, yeah. fucking years. 17 years and 95% wow. of your money.
Exactly. Wow. Yeah, because people always look back and like, oh, overnight success, Spartan Race from nowhere to... Yeah.
Now, when this was all happening, what do you know what's going on with like the other ones like Go Ruck and Tough Mudder
yeah.
and like, did that happen after or are they competitively going at the same time?
So in any industry, podcasts, radio, automobile manufacturing, everybody rushes in. Right. And at that time, you were coming out of a really difficult financial crash.
That's right.
So anybody that was in construction that had a hammer or a screw gun was
fucked.
Now in the obstacle racing business. Right? So there were 300 or 400 competitors that popped up overnight.
Whoa, that many!
Oh, they were everywhere.
Even know that.
Yeah,
wow.
yeah, everywhere. Everybody. But what happened was a lot of them ended up not putting on the events because to put on an event, cost $600,000 to put on an event.
Wow.
So if you don't have enough people there, you're going to lose, you know, it cuts both ways. It's mm-hmm. it's pretty painful. So these guys all launched out of everywhere. Everybody had an opinion on how they were going to do it and a name and this and that. And we were fighting battles competitively everywhere on just getting our brand to stand out. Now, we got really lucky on a couple of things. One is we got lucky with the name. Like I wish I could say to you, we sat around and strategized and had branding experts. No, it was like Spartan. Oh, that sounds cool. Let's just do it. but that name has meaning for thousands of years. It just means something to people, right?
Yeah.
So that's great. Two is because I was racing for over a decade, was not going to do something that was just silly and about mud and about hurting people. It had to be authentic. It had to be athletic. That was just my... I wasn't going to be involved in something that wasn't legit. We were going to mm-hmm. time people. And by the way, if you couldn't do an obstacle, okay, but you're doing 30 burpees. It was going to be painful, right? Mm-hmm. There was going to be punishment. Not in a negative way, but like you had to attempt and to do the obstacle and you had to get proficient at it. And if you didn't, oh, well, you're doing 30 burpees, which sucks,
mm-hmm. right?
Right. Mm-hmm. And by the way, on all these things, timing people, on making forcing them to do the burpees if they can't do the – making it athletic and not doing silly things – those actually hurt the business in the early days because they're not gimmicky, yeah. and people were afraid of it, right? But I stuck to it and I said no, I'm not going to be involved in it if it's gimmicky. I'm just not going to do it.
Mm-hmm. That's long term thinking there.
Yeah,
but yeah, and it was I wish I could say I was smart, but it was just like no, it's just not me.
Sure,
right?
Integrity.
And then third was my mom and the philosophy from all those years of the monks, right, and the yoga and the fasting. It was like this, the race is just the tip of the iceberg. Below the surface is a philosophy on how to live. And that's what's going to be oozing out of this brand. And so, again, people didn't notice it right away. But when we look back now, 7 years later, 17 years for me, but 17 years later from the start of Spartan, we're growing at 20% a year. We're the largest endurance running company in the world. It's because of those silly little things. You know, they say we make a lot of small decisions in life that are seemingly insignificant, But I like to use the analogy of if the four of us were in a rocket ship right now and there were a bunch of dials and knobs and stuff, and we turned one a millimeter to the right, you'd be like, oh, it's no big deal, except you end up on the wrong planet,
right?
Mm-hmm. Right?
Eventually,
and so, yeah, and so the little decisions that I just described, I think are the reason we've got a moment of time where we're successful. Well,
especially
right now
in today's market, it's not just about a product, but it's about the why behind the product. You know, like Apple does as well as they do, for example, because of the whole thing, the whole brand, the whole philosophy. And it sounds like you guys are doing that. You've got that understanding. So it's what's giving you, you know, so much market share and why you continue to grow.
No doubt about it. Yeah. And now everybody's trying to copy what we did, but it's hard because if you're not authentic about it, it's the consumer knows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, besides the races, how else do you guys monetize? Do you guys have apparel and retail and stuff like that? Or what does the whole business look like?
We do. So we have an apparel business, which should dwarf everything we do because of this name, Spartan, mm-hmm. right? But we're just too busy with events and growing events right now. But it's a sizable business. Put it this way, anybody would just like our apparel business big enough that it'd be a nice little side business mm-hmm. for anybody. Mm-hmm. But it should be much bigger. We've got a little bit of a training business. We built a gym down in Miami with Barry Sternlicht from Starwood.
Mm-hmm.
So he built a brand new kick-ass hotel on the beach called The One, O-N-E. And he built us out a $5 million gym. It's unbelievable. You got to see this place.
Awesome.
So we got complete creative control and a complete programming control. And he's an awesome guy. I've had him on the podcast. He's a badass. And so he helped us out with that. And we hope to stamp more of those around the world. And then we got the podcast and all the media and the television shows and stuff. But if I told you it was easy and I had a perfect strategy in front, I'd be lying to you.
Sure.
I'm fighting fires every day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's part of it, though. And I love when people like you share that and talk about it, because everybody sees the glamorous side of it. Like, oh, he's flying around all over the world and he gets this. He's got nice cars. He's all these things like that. And just people think it's just like, oh, come on.
Driving a fucking minivan. A minivan up front. And my kids say, what is that? And I say, well, that's first class. Well, how come we're not sitting there? Well,
exactly.
We have to get that's that awesome. Photo, by the way, of him in that minivan when he leaves today, for sure.
Oh, yeah. what are you looking moving ahead? What are you guys looking to tackle or do now?
Well, I mean, the big thing for me is, could we change 100 million lives?
Got
big,
it.
Bold ambition. Mm-hmm. And how do we do that? And we want to get people eating properly, just like you guys. We mm-hmm. want to get them thinking. It's a big thing, right? Thinking like a Spartan. And then getting out there and actually living it and training. And unfortunately, the way the human beings are today, to your point, unless you have an event on the schedule, unless you're a very unique individual, you're not going into that gym every day and training. You guys are unique. Some of your listeners are unique. But most people, they need a date. They mm-hmm. need something that's scaring them into training,
mm.
right? And mm-hmm. not taking the extra scoop of ice cream. So I'll tell you a funny one. So we talked about delayed gratification.
Yeah.
So Stanford, not too far from here, I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
Professor Walter Mischel, 1972, puts out something.
Very familiar with the study you're quoting.
You know the study.
Yeah.
Should I
talk about it.
So puts a bunch of kids in cubicles, offers kids marshmallow. Kids could take the marshmallow now or they could wait and get two later.
Oh, we've talked about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a great, great study.
Most kids take the marshmallow, but they followed them for 30 years. And what they found were the kids that were able to abstain from eating the marshmallow had better lives in every respect, right? Better SAT scores, better marriages, better cars, house, everything.
Yeah, the whole thing was basically eat one marshmallow now or wait, and they gave them some time, amount of time, which to a little kid is forever. And if you wait, I'll give you two marshmallows.
Yeah.
And the ones that did that across the board, far more successful. It's that delayed gratification, that understanding that if I wait now, I'll get more later. Yeah. And they find that very, very common amongst all most successful people. Except for the few, you know, lucky ones or whatever.
Outliers, yeah. And I learned a lot of that probably from the neighborhood with those guys in some respects. Certainly my neighbor that got me started in the business, he would say to me, look, you're in the backyard anyway. Straighten up the shed. Straighten up the lawn furniture. Clean around the pool. I know you're not getting paid for that, but go the extra mile, because when that person comes home, that customer comes home, they're going to say, oh, my God, I can't live without this guy, right? But most people would say, well, I'm not doing that. I'm not getting paid. If I don't get money right now, I'm not. So anyway, I expanded that to my whole life. My son He's 6 years old at the time. I'm like, I got to test him. I got to do the marshmallow test.
Oh, did you?
But I'm a little scared because I'm like, fuck.
What happens if he takes the marshmallow?
Right, if he takes the marshmallow, I'm fucked the rest of my life, right? Do I want to know or not know, right?
Oh, man, yeah.
So we're out late one night. We're in Brooklyn. I take him on a little trip, and we're in Brooklyn, and it's like 10 o'clock at night. He should be in bed at 8, so I'm already justifying in my head. Well, if he takes it.
Maybe he's tired.
He's tired, yeah. Right. There's a lot of excuses I can come up with. So I give him a scoop of ice cream. And I'm like, hey, Jack, which I don't give them junk food. So already I'm against the wall on this one. So I say, or you could wait and I'll give you two. And my timer on my phone is about 3.5 minutes in. And he turns to me and he says, hey, Dad, how long do I have to wait to get 15 scoops?
Oh,
gangster. I thought, smart kid.
but you know, you want to end this thing, this conversation we're having here. We're playing for 15 scoops in life.
Fuck yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We're playing for 15 scoops.
Fuck yeah,
absolutely.
So don't take the cookie.
I love it. I love it, man. That's a beautiful way to wrap. That's a beautiful way
really,
to wrap.
Yeah, I really appreciate the conversation.
Yeah, man. Joe. Excellent, man. What a pleasure having you down.
I hope we could do something together in the future, man.
We're gonna do stuff.
Yeah, no, let's turn this shit off because I actually want to talk to you about business. My wheels have been turning the whole time we've been talking. Yeah.
You guys want me to sign off here?
Yeah, go ahead,
sure,
sign off.
Yeah.
All right, so 30 days of coaching available for free at mindpumpmedia.com. You can also find us on Instagram at mindpumpmedia. And our personal pages. Mine is Mind Pump Sal. Adam is Mind Pump Adam. And Justin is Mind Pump Justin.
Okay, Joe, you got to tell me the Japan story, bro.
So
lay it down.
I don't know if it's 10, 15 years ago I read in the New York Times about these marathon monks. And it catches my attention because of my mom's background, having the monks in the living room and believing in all this stuff. And I never dove deep and really understood Buddhism or any of this. But the marathon word, I think, with the monk got me excited, right? So I dive in and I start learning about these guys in Japan that basically, let's say the four of us wanted to become monks. We would go up this mountain, Mount Hai. Anybody Japanese listening says I'm saying it wrong. And we would knock on the door. And these temples on this mountain have been around for like 800-900 years. They came over from China. And if there's I'm going to screw this up. Disciplines within Buddhism, six of them came from this mountain.
Okay.
So we show up there, we knock on the door, we're like, all right, we're ready, we want to be monks. They're like, great, shave your head, throw on this robe, take these wooden sandals. You guys look, you know, fit, right? You've been training in San Jose, so you should be fine. And they're like, you got to do 100 days of marathons around this. There's like a trail system.
100 days?
100 days. So every day we're going to do a marathon. And along the way, you know, it's not a race, guys, they're telling us. You pray and you've got your incense you light and you get spiritual. And so we do the 100 days. We shaved our heads. We got the wooden sandals on. We got the robes. We knock out 100 days. We high-five each other. We're like, this is going to be awesome. We're going to do a podcast. We knocked out 100 days. We're going to be monks. And they're like, all right, great job on the 100 days. Take this rope and take this sword. Now we know you're serious. You got 800 more days to go. But if you decide to quit, guys, you got to kill yourself on the course. So that's the deal. Right?
What? Fuck!
That's the deal.
Whoa.
And this has been going on for close to 1,000 years. And so I got to go see these fucking monks. Right?
Dude.
Holy shit.
So I'm in Southeast Asia last year, and I meet this guy, just like I met you guys randomly. And I'm telling him about this. He's like, dude, I got the map from that New York Times writer. I know her. I said, we're going. I'm buying you a ticket. I got to meet these marathon monks. Matter of fact, we're going to go scout it out. I'm going to bring my family because I want to show my kids the monks that kill themselves because they're quitters versus the monks that finish and are winners, right?
Oh, my God.
So he gets the map. We go out. We're going to go do it ourselves the week in advance of my family come. I can't tell my family what I'm just going to tell them we're going to go for a little walk. I can't tell them.
Right? Oh, by the way.
Yeah, my wife will kill me, right? So me and David go out, we bring a third friend, and he's trying to navigate. I didn't live in Japan at this time. I was in Southeast Asia. I don't know Japanese. He's trying to navigate the train system to get us to this mountain. No one really knows this place. We take the train ends, we get off, and we're like, oh, it's going to be awesome. The trolley that goes up the mountain is shut for the season. So we're like, well, fuck it. We'll hike up the mountain, right? He's like, yeah, I think I could kind of figure it out. Anyway, it's like a two-hour hike straight up this mountain. We get up the mountain. We're a little lost. We're going in circles, and it doesn't look like we're going to be able to find this thing. Out of the corner, I hear, like, chanting. And I grew up with my mother in the house with the chant. I'm like,
that's them.
It's them. Like, I'm hearing like little bells or something. So we hike through the woods, and beautiful temple pops up right in front on the other side of the hill we come over. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. We found the secret. I feel like Indiana Jones. We found this thing, right? I take off my shoes. I don't know if we're allowed to go in or not, but I'm going in. And we go in the thing, and the incense is burning. They're praying. And all of a sudden, now we're praying. This is unbelievable, right? So we come out. We walk around the stairs. We're checking the whole thing out before we try to find the course, the 25, 26-mile course. And what do I stumble upon? A fucking parking lot.
What?
And a ticket booth. It's tourists come every day. We didn't need it. We could have taken a taxi. So anyway, if you're listening out there, you got to go see the Marathon Monks. But so we do the course. We hike the thing, and it is awesome. We get a little lost, but we figure it out, because it's not just a straight. There's lots of offshoots on the trail, so you really got to know where you're going, and it's not something they allow you to do. We just went out and did it. The next week, my family comes, because now I kind of know the course, and I tell my wife, I got my four kids, one of which is a three-year-old that I'm going to carry. I'm like, oh, no, we'll just check this thing out. It's awesome. It's spiritual. We'll just go for a little hike. But in my mind, we're going 25 miles, right?
And so, you're not telling them this yet?
No, and I can't even, and the thing is, I can't carry much, because I can't say to her. She would say, well, why do we have a backpack?
Why do you have such a backpack?
Yeah, why do we have a backpack full of food and drinks? So I can't really bring much. So so anyway, we go, and I get lost.
Oh, shit.
I get lost, and we are like 13 miles in.
Oh, God.
And I see this, like, I thought it was a wolf. I got scared. We all got scared. It was just a dog. But it was strange, because there's nothing out there for there to be a dog. And the dog is coming at us, and it leaves. And my wife's convinced to this day it was a spirit. But anyway, we walk past where the dog was coming at us, and we go about another 20 minutes, and there's a dead end. I'm like, oh, we must have missed a turn back there. So I turn around. Now I say, because I'm about to lose, you know, they're about to lose their shit, my family. So I got to get ahead of them maybe 10 minutes just to try to figure it out, so that it was no big deal. We just missed this turn, right? So I run ahead a bit, and sure enough, 40 minutes later, the dog's coming at me again. Fucking dog's lost. Dog's lost.
No, no.
We're all lost.
I'm lost. Anyway, we are out there, and it turns into a complete shit show, because the sun's going down. It's cold. There's no way we're going back up. That's going to take forever. We end up going down into a ravine, stuff I would have did in adventure racing. It would be no big deal for the four of us, but I got a three-year-old. I got my wife, right? We go down into a ravine. I don't know where we're going to come out. We end up popping out in the middle of the night into a cemetery. There's crows flying over. I mean, it was pretty fitting for what went on, but awesome experience. From my perspective, awesome experience. Got to show the kids all the little the tombstones of the guys that killed themselves are like,
wow, so they're actually just killing themselves.
Yeah, they're tiny little broken, like they're not celebrating, those guys. Mm-hmm. And then you see the big, whatever.
Tombs.
For the guys that did it, number 45 that got it done. One Japanese guy was so upset with himself from World War II that he did two sessions. He did 1,800 days.
Oh, my God.
To cleanse his soul. So anyway, if you're listening out there, make your way to Japan. Go check out the Marathon Monks.
Wow.
Damn.
Excellent story.
That's amazing.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.